From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Neil Thomas, author of the new book, Taking Leave of Darwin, A Longtime Agnostic Discovers the Case for Design. Let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and Professor Thomas in their conversation.
Talk about the materialistic magic that's part and parcel of the Darwinian paradigm.
Well, I think it really goes back to whether you think that things can emerge by some kind of occult automatism, as in magic shows for children and adults, even to the modern day, or if you feel obligated to be able to put your finger on exactly the process or the mechanism which causes these things in the first place. And one of my gripes is with the too glib assumption that you can elide, that is, leave out many parts of your chain of reasoning in order to simply postulate that such a progression must have occurred. Often the word must have, would have, probably would have. This is the kind of thing. As a self-styled rationalist, this does not sit well with me. I need to be able to have the proof of things. And the fact that that proof is not forthcoming, I find deeply suspicious. I mean, one of the things I've thought about, because for many large tranches of my life, I've counted myself as a rationalist, is why on earth, when the philosophical current which you associate most strongly with rationalism, that is logical positivism, the ideas of Sir Alfred Ayer and his Language, Truth, and Logic of 1936, and the Vienna Circle, and all that sort of stuff in the early 20th century, why is it that when they were inclined to call all manifestations of religion nonsense, they'd spelt this as non-sense. And what they meant, they weren't being scurrilous. What they were saying was, this does not stand up to rational analysis. Okay, I can understand from their perspective where they were coming from. But why did they never attack Darwinism on the same grounds, which has even less empirical support, it seems to me, than many of the major world religions does? And it wasn't until I was rereading a book recently by a philosopher called Richard Spilsbury. It's a critique of Darwinism, which came out, I think it was OUP 1974, so some time ago now. He said that he had had the same wonder as to why the logical positivists had not attacked Darwinism, since they've attacked every other person in the universe for being subpar logically. And Spilsbury said that basically he felt this was because, even though they might have felt that Darwinism was questionable, they did not wish to question it because it all contributed to the kind of materialist worldview that the logical positives held on other grounds themselves. And that seems to me all too plausible, because it chimes very exactly with what happened with Darwin's famous bulldog, Thomas Huxley, who himself, right up until the end of his days, he believed in evolution in some way or other, but he did not believe in natural selection. But yet he was Darwin's greatest defender. Darwin felt that Huxley soft-pedaled natural selection in his talking about evolution, and Huxley tried to apologize into his beard about that sometimes. But he still, in his heart of heart, he did not believe in natural selection. So I think it's quite possible that the logical positivists would not have believed in natural selection, could have thought it was as much of a load of old nonsense as I think it. But they stayed silent because they had another agenda, and that was the materialist, non-theistic outlook on life.
Yeah, that's right. I want you to talk a little bit more about your fellow Brit, Richard Dawkins. He says that the universe we observe has precisely the properties that we would expect if there is at the bottom no design, no purpose, no evil and no good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. You, by contrast, make a strong case for Earth being a privileged planet, that the Earth is fine-tuned for habitability, that the Earth is uniquely blessed. What are we to make of the squabble between the two Brits?
I'm not a scientist like Dawkins is. I'm simply, I hope, an unbiased member, foreman of the jury who's making an independent audit of what the scientists have done. But anyway, yes, I think this is a strange one. Basically, Dawkins, in as much as he, many people have said he's a stranger to philosophy. Well, he might be a stranger to philosophy in the technical sense, but I think that his philosophical mentor was one Bertrand Russell from the early 20th century. Russell was a strange man. He had begun his life in faith, but had lost his faith and had become rather embittered by it. And he'd become a kind of blank and blanket atheist. And he was predisposed to see the heavens and earth through the filter of that atheism. And it is true that if you look outside this orb that we're privileged enough to inhabit, I mean, all you can see outside is a kind of gigantic and destructive pinball machine of planets and meteors and fire and destruction and so on. And I think that, yes, it was really from the 1970s that people were minded to connect the dots and to see that there were these cosmological constants, the so-called Goldilocks zone. That cliche has been done to death, I know that. But the fact that the Earth is not too hot, not too cold, it has plentiful provisions thus far, unless we use them all up, which I hope we don't. And so nobody seemed to have that perspective on things, or not enough people had that perspective until the 70s. And I think what Dawkins and his mentor Russell were going back to was a time before cosmologists had looked at this problem four square and were inclined to lump together the Earth with the exterior cosmos. And I think that the Earth and the exterior cosmos are incommensurable in that sense. I mean, the exterior cosmos is a form of hell, in my view, whereas what we've got here, even though we mess it up hugely, is a potentially extremely productive and maybe even blessed place. So I think what we've got here is a difference in zeitgeist. I think that Dawkins, going back to Russell, is looking back at a period in cosmology when, before the distinction between the privileged planet and the rest of the universe had been foregrounded so much, and was more inclined to speak from that rather, I would say, antiquated philosophical and cosmological position. Yeah, I think that's what I would say to that one.
Well said. Something that you mentioned earlier on in our conversation was the multiverse hypothesis. And I want to go back to that. Is that just a cop-out? With biological evolution, the cop-out is always, given enough time, anything is possible. And in the same train of thought, people are saying, given an infinite number of universes, again, anything is possible.
Well, I mean, you should be perhaps talking to some of the brain boxes who come out with this kind of thing rather than to a retired liberal arts professor on this subject. But from what I can see, and I have tried to undertake an independent audit, as I say, of what, you know, people cleverer than myself have said on this subject. For a start, the idea of a multiverse is not a new idea, surprisingly enough. It goes right back to Greek antiquity, when some philosophers, who were really brainstormers in those days, of course, said that the universe might be issuing separate worlds, sort of like a bubble goes into a number of bubbles and that kind of thing. That's where that comes from. But yes, I suppose it is a cop-out in as much as people have said it's a kind of cosmic natural selection, that if you postulate the universe as being a conglomerate of different worlds, then maybe somebody had to get lucky. I don't find this a very strong argument. I find it a rather facile and glib argument myself for why we should be in this fortunate position. But that's what people say. And I also think that a number of ideas, I don't think that Darwinism is in fact a modern idea. I think that the idea of chance, or in his case, natural selection, you know, with the chance mutations and so on, giving it a modern spin as he did, goes back to Greek antiquity, to Epicurus and his Roman disciple Lucretius.
Stay right there. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Neil Thomas. In his new book, Taking Leave of Darwin, University Professor Neil Thomas, a rationalist and humanist, explains how researching and writing about evolutionary theory has brought him to a place he would have found surprising before embarking on the project, especially regarding the intersection of science and religion. Indeed, concludes Thomas, with the naturalistic, materialistic alternative having failed so significantly, we are left with no other choice but to consider the possibility of the God hypothesis. To receive your copy of Taking Leave of Darwin, A Longtime Agnostic Discovers the Case for Design by Neil Thomas, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org. The number of wolves surrounding the Christian flock is growing, and they relish nothing more than docile sheep utterly incapable of defending themselves. From militant secularists at home to militant Islamists abroad, the assaults on biblical Christianity are growing dangerously. But Christian Research Institute support team members aren't in favor of feeding these wolves. Instead, each day they're making possible an array of outreaches that defang these wolf packs with solid arguments and evidence that have stood the test of time. What's more, support team members are equipping themselves with CRI's Equipping Essentials, a hand-picked collection of the best apologetics tools around. Your selection of resources, along with a complimentary subscription to the Christian Research Journal, are just our way of saying thanks. To learn more about the benefits of membership, simply visit equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org.
University professor Neil Thomas was a committed Darwinist and agnostic until an investigation of evolutionary theory led him to the startling conclusion that he had been conned. As he studied the work of Darwin's defenders, he found himself encountering tactics eerily similar to the methods of political brainwashing he had studied as a scholar. Thomas felt impelled to write a book as a sort of warning call to humanity. Beware, you have been fooled. The result is Taking Leave of Darwin, a fascinating history and analysis of the evolution debate, written in exquisite prose. Thomas shows that objections to evolutionary theory raised by Darwin's own contemporaries have never been effectively answered. To receive your copy of Taking Leave of Darwin, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org.
Here again are Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Professor Neil Thomas, as they continue their conversation.
I don't think that Darwinism is in fact a modern idea. I think that the idea of chance, or in his case, natural selection, goes back to Greek antiquity, to Epicurus and his Roman disciple Lucretius, who said that the world that we know is a conglomeration of atoms all reacting in different ways, and that in some way certain results, certain patterns would come about whether you wanted them to or not, that there was a kind of, well, I would call it automatism, I mean, and maybe even magic in that kind of thinking, that it is magical thinking. But this is what they said. And the strange thing was that the Lucretian idea of chance chimed very nicely with the Darwinian idea of evolution, which also depends on chance to an unconscionable degree, as most of us would think. And really, what happened at that point is that many of the older philosophers of antiquity, like Plato, Aristotle, the early physician Galen, who had complete contempt for the Lucretian idea of things emerging by chance, somehow gained credibility by being linked to the claimed scientific nature of Darwinism. And it was only on the basis of that, I think, that people thought, oh, well, Lucretianism is a pretty strange idea, but perhaps if it's backed up by modern science in the form of Darwinism, oh, perhaps we'd better pile into that and believe it now. That's one way, I think, in which an illogical idea has implanted itself in Western consciousness since the 1860s, and more especially from the 1920s, 30s, and 40s of the last century.
Yeah, and I think just as the ancients, you know, they had the materialistic concept, nothing new under the sun. Mm. What Darwin wrote about, he got a lot from his grandfather Erasmus, who was a polymath.
Yes.
And then, as you say, I mean, you go back to the ancients and find the same sort of idea percolating. Mm. On the other hand, the ancients also talked about the fact that the heavens declare the glory of God, the skies proclaim the work of his hands, or God's eternal power, divine nature, clearly seen through what has been made, and therefore human beings are without excuse. I want to go to chapter 5 of your book, which is titled The Mystery of Mysteries, and just read a series of questions that you pose and have you comment. How did a once barren terrestrial environment give rise to life forms? How did the resources deemed necessary to the process, self-replicating molecules bearing genetic information, arise in the first place? What is the ultimate origin of the genetic code, and who or what directed it to produce plant and animal species? Why are we safely cocooned in the cosmic Goldilocks zone, when so many parts of the universe are more reminiscent of Dante's Inferno? Mm-hmm. Where do the laws of physics come from? What was before the Big Bang, and why is there something rather than nothing? Is it fair to say that the notion that the physical facts fix all the facts doesn't stand up to common sense in light of those questions that you raise?
I think what I was writing about there is essentially the existential imponderables, which we may never know the answer to. I think that especially, and I'm talking outside my subject area now, but what I've been able to read and glean, the ideas of quantum physics and mechanics, in which so much is uncertain, tenuous, and probabilistic rather than certain in the ways that we're accustomed to from the Newtonian conceptions of unbroken laws and so on, mean that the underlying reality of our existence, and remember that the quantum world refers to the invisible world, which we didn't even know existed till 75 years ago, because the Newtonian big world is undergirded by the quantum world, then it would be foolish to suggest that anybody could have a complete answer to some of these imponderables. I think that was the point I was making. Or did you wish to ask me another question?
No. I think that covers it. You know, I'm basically asking for an elaboration on what the Oxford mathematician John Lennox said, that the laws of physics are descriptive and predictive, but yes, not creative in their own right. In other words, you know, you can have an explanation of gravity, but you can never communicate that gravity created gravity.
That's right. I think that John Lennox was sort of crossing swords there with Stephen Hawking and Leonard Mlodinow in a 2012 book they put out, in which they said that certain things could be understood in a purely materialistic way. But I think what John Lennox then said, well, yes, but how do you explain these very basic things like the law of gravity and so on? Well, you can't. It's just there. You can't get beyond that.
I often say that contrast is the conduit to clarity. And I want to make a contrast here. If you follow the Darwinian tributary that has come to dominate the academy, you have to conclude that the universe quite literally created itself.
Yes.
If you follow Einstein, I think he has a more dignified acknowledgement, the acknowledgement that the laws of nature manifest the existence of a spirit vastly superior to that of humanity, and one in the face of which we with our modest powers must feel humble. And I think the contrast here between the academy, which seems to me to be boastful, and Einstein, who was a superior intellect, far more humble in light of the evidence that surrounded him.
Yes, I think so. I mean, I was recently reading a biography of Einstein by one Max Jammer, and he goes into this quite a bit. And the notion that certain abstract qualities, if you buy into certain abstract postulations, there's got to be an element of faith in it. And I think that probably Einstein saw as much as anybody else did, or perhaps better than many of his colleagues did, that there was a necessity for this. I mean, the alternative of what you said the academy buys into, I suppose you could gloss it in historical terms as a kind of hubris of trying to claim too much. And I think this is a danger, that we try to claim too much. And perhaps in former decades, I tried that too much myself, but it doesn't really work. You can't really convince yourself that the universe created itself, that we are autonomous beings. This is not true. We're extremely dependent. We are, as somebody said, the subjects of the cosmos rather than the rulers of the cosmos.
Something in your book that I want to conclude with, the overabundance of what you call invisible natural wonders and our own false sense of entitlement about these innumerable benefits. And you mention a number of them. You mentioned the liver, the heart, the cells, which are a diminutive universe in each one of these individual cells, eyelids, skin, photosynthesis, and on it goes. I mean, we ought to have this sense of wonder, and instead we're stuck in this materialistic paradigm.
Yeah, it's a paradigm that I'm sort of emerging from myself, so I can understand why people would want this. I mean, I suppose if you're employed as a scientist, you're employed to find materialistic solutions to problems, but I think there's a limit beyond which you can't. And I think in former decades, I don't know whether the word is complacent or over-entitled, but, you know, one does take one's body for granted. And you do tend to think, well, it's a kind of entitlement. Oh, yeah, yes, it's just a genetic birthright. But the point is, it is also a multi-miracle in common parlance. I mean, it would be dishonest to say that it were anything but a miracle in the way, in the semantic sense that we use miracle in everyday parlance. And I think that is the sense of wonder. And I think that was borne in upon me by reading the book Why Us by James Lefanu, who's a British retired doctor and medical contributor to the Daily Telegraph, whom I met recently in London. I'll repeat the title for anybody who's interested, Why Us? And it's a book about the human genome experiment, which he knows far more about than I do, which disappointed many medics like himself because it had not brought us to a right royal route to actually understanding the genetic basis of life. There are so many non-gene explanations for what goes on, and the gene is not in itself. Even if you can explore the gene to its ultimate limits, there are things besides the genes, epigenetic is the word that they use, epigenetic forces, which we haven't really cottoned on to yet. So the thing is of such huge complexity that I don't know how many lifetimes, millennia, whatever it would ever take. My own opinion is that we will never come to understand these things fully.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Professor Neil Thomas. To hear this Hank Unplugged podcast interview in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping outreaches, Hank would like to send you Neil Thomas's book, Taking Leave of Darwin, A Longtime Agnostic Discovers the Case for Design. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. Anyone who's been paying attention knows there's a war going on, not just on traditional morality, civility, and decency, but even more fundamentally on historic notions of truth. And the enemy isn't just the onslaught of fake news facilitated by a post-truth culture and turbocharged by growing legions of ideological spin doctors. No, the real enemies of truth range from postmodernist convictions that there is no objective truth to militant scientism that claims that only science can determine truth, and religion is little more than primitive superstitions. But CRI support team members are not waving a white flag of surrender. They're holding the fort by undergirding every one of Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping and life-changing outreaches 24/7. To learn how you can make a difference and enjoy all the benefits of support team membership, simply visit equip.org.